When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. C-Y-M-B-I-O. T-I-K-A.com.
Hey, listen.
From the Greek anti, meaning reverse, opposite, or antithesis, which itself has anti in it, combined with agony, the Latin agony meaning pain or evil, and then the English sts, which is the sound they make when you defeat them at the end of the game. This is One Upsmanship. I'm Michael Swaim, and today I'm talking favorite antagonists with, introduce yourself, my intrepid co-host.
Thank you, Adam Ganser, protagonist of this podcast, and also astounded by the way you're able to keep that plane from crashing. I can't believe you managed to pull out of that.
Did I?
That verbal tailspin.
That's not how I remember it. I remember eating you in order to stay alive through the harsh winter off of that joke, off of that bit. But you're the protagonist. I'm the anti-hero. And together we will good cop, bad cop our way through a very special episode of One Upsmanship where we're ranking our top 10 video game antagonists. And the only thing I want to say up top is A, help me remember when to put ad breaks in because I'm not going to recall because it's the structure differently.
It.
And B, this was really fun to come up with. Oh, there's a C.
It was.
There's a C. But B, this is really fun to come up with, and I want to differentiate between antagonist and villain, right? Because I just, there's some on my list where this will come into play.
Yeah. I get it.
An antagonist is opposed to your protagonist. Their goal is at odds or becomes a hurdle for your protagonist, versus a villain, which connotes they have malicious intent for whatever reason. They're bad, right? So we're not just talking about baddies. Otherwise, I think my list would be geared more along the lines of like maybe Bowser could be on there, right? But antagonist implies a little more dimensionality. Okay, and then my C, and then I'll pass the wand over to my learned cohort, is that I don't think that's it. Forgot it. You go.
That's okay. No. So all I wanted to add is it's our rankings, meaning I got a little more personal with this list than I normally. I normally try to be aware of, like, you know, public perception a little bit. This time I was like, I'm just going to list the ones that I had strong feelings about or enjoyed personally as I make this
list. Well, it's favorite, so, not best, right?
Favorite, that's right, favorite. So this time, it really is a true favorite list, yeah. I think. And that'll make it harder for you to be upset.
That's true. This will not impact the drive. So this is a favorite antagonist list, not a best villains list. That would be a whole different list.
it would be. And I think the reason that we are, like, ultimately what I hope we get to in this episode is talking about why these characters either resonated or, like, what made them successful as part of the game systems to you. Like, so I hope it leads to a little bit of a larger discussion about, a little bit of a writing discussion about what makes a good villain.
Yeah,
and also,
that's the way my brain went too.
Yeah, and also a little bit of a, like, an experience conversation, like, why in your experience did this character matter?
I recall my tertiary point, which is C, and I just wanted to reveal this ahead of time. This was going to be Fave 5, but I was too scared that there would be an objective, frankly, like, I was just worried it would just be GLaDOS and Andrew Ryan, and then we'd have three randos.
Right.
So
that's right.
I think with 10, we can dig into more of the relative rankings of, like, oh, there you put them on, but so much lower than me, etc. Because I do think it's interesting. There's so many fabulous games, or our celestial hard drive wouldn't be so big. But not every game has an antagonist, like a true antagonist, especially not a memorable antagonist that could make a best of list. It's a like rarefied air. So there's a lot of cool cats on the list. Let's get into it. Fuck checkpoints. Where we're going, we don't need checkpoints.
We don't even need them.
Number 10. Who wants to go first, or should we serpentine?
You go first.
Do I go first every time, or do we serpentine it?
We can serpentine. Let's do that. That'll be fun.
All right.
And then after the 8th, we'll take a break for our sponsors.
Yeah. From the Spanish for serpentine. Number 10, played ably by Danny Delk, and this is the most villainous antagonist on my list. Purple Tentacle from Day of the Tentacle.
Yes.
A game that I will make you play in the fullness of time on this show. Point-and-click adventure game, classic LucasArts, and the thing I want to say about it is it's sort of like, what's another one I can think of? In the film world, it happens from time to time where, landscape so dominated by IPs and franchises, including even on such a tiny scale as this little beautiful moment in time that some of us call LucasArts art point-and-click adventure time, like that era, when we had Sam and Max Hit the Road, which is an adaptation of a comic, later became a cartoon show. We have, of course, like the Star Wars games, King's Quest and Space Quest and all this shit, and the Pirates one that I always forget with Guybrush Threepwood. Monkey Island, that's the ticket. Day of the Tentacle was weird in that there was not a Day of the Tentacle 2, and Day of the Tentacle was not based on anything, and it was just this weird-ass IP from scratch in a really refreshing way where you're like, that's just a good one-off movie. What it makes me think of is The Emperor's New Groove, where you're like, that's just a good-ass. There's not even really songs in that. It's not like your average Disney movie. So this was the weirdo LucasArts point-and-click adventure game, and it really worked because of the character and the voice acting, like the characterizations and the voice acting. Of course, the three protagonists plus the professor guy, so I guess four, nail all their parts, but it certainly wouldn't have worked without the two tentacles, green and purple. Adam's not saying anything, I think, because he's totally unfamiliar. But
I don't know this game yet, unfortunately.
As far as like an arch villain goes, like classic twiddling mustache, evil, over-the-top cartoonish villain, I would give it to Purple Tentacle, I think, over whatever his name is from the Ratchet and Clank games. And those are the two that I think of as the most like that. My vote's for Purple Tentacle. So he fills that slot for me. Snidely Whiplash.
That makes sense.
Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah, the Dr. Nefarious.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. I get that. I've always wanted to play this game, so I'm sure now that I have a PC,
great game.
I'll get into it. Yeah, I am actually excited to do more point and clicks. So that sounds fun. I've looked at it a couple times real hard on console and like, nah, it looks like a PC game to me. Okay,
yeah,
do you mind
if
I transition to our first? Okay, great. So my first, and this is purely for nostalgic reasons, I won't lie to you, purely nostalgic reasons, is Carmen Sandiego.
Ooh, which one?
Where the hell is she?
World or just time where, or world?
I remember world most.
Okay, time most was a big one in my life.
Yeah, and like I think Carmen Sandiego is great for video games because Carmen Sandiego managed to work its way into schools. So like it was one of the only video games you could play when you were a kid at the right time that was considered educational. So that alone made playing this game something you would look forward to because it was like, oh, a game at school? Yeah, right? So there was that, it had that advantage. And Carmen Sandiego is just really well branded as a video game villain, right? Like, what did she do? I don't know. She's never been particularly evil from what I could tell. She might even be just sort of a completely misunderstood anti-hero, right? But as the person, the object of the game is to find her and retrieve the things she stole. And she's super well branded with her, you know, zoot suit looking noir red outfit, right? Or yellow. Was it yellow?
Red.
I mean, it was red.
On,
yeah, yeah.
Passionate.
I thought so too. That's how I remembered it. I just want to make sure I wasn't crazy. Red suit and like, you know, her eyes were hidden by her giant blob of hair. And she was just such an intriguing figure, right? This woman of mystery, like, why is she doing all this, you know? And I remember it was actually kind of a hard game. Like, it took a long time to get to Carmen Sandiego, so there was an aspect of, like, when? You know, like, when will I finally get this?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, early video game villains are fun because, generally speaking, they're archetypal. And like, you know, they just sort of fit like a, like, I think Bowser is the archetypal dragon guarding the castle. Like, that's the idea. And I think with Carmen Sandiego, it's like there's a kind of maybe slightly misogynist archetype. But I still think like this woman who's sort of on the run for reasons you don't understand, you know, like it's a very noir trope. And I find
she's
that
a bad
trope
bitch. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Is. Yeah. Are you sure he's not a turtle, Bowser?
I'm pretty sure he was like a dragon.
Okay.
He breathes fire in the first game.
Yeah.
I just think like but that's he has what a turtle he. Shell. Right, right. I mean, they're unique, but they're serving that archetypal function is the idea. Yeah. So that's my number 10. My number 9 is, this is going to probably really make you mad. I hope you're ready. Is M. Bison from Street Fighter 2.
No, Bison. Make me sell it, baby. Make me love it. Make me believe.
M. Bison.
What's interesting about his story?
Why?
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that.
Also wears red. That's all I have.
Yeah. No, M. Bison is not interesting in so much as what a cool backstory and all that, right? M. Bison was just a really hard boss fight at the end of a really memorable Street Fighter game. And I remember being in the arcade and spending, you know, quarter after quarter trying to beat him with his weird flip punch attack and the fact that he could fly all over the map with his stomping and stuff. So he was just really hard was a big part of it. And the other cool thing is that eventually you could unlock him as a player, right? Which, and that was one of the first times that happened in video games for me. So it's like, oh, I earned him. You know, like when he came to the home console version, you earned him. And it was like the best, right? Because he's such a powerful figure that being able to use him was really satisfying. He got to be such a contentious figure in my household that we were no longer allowed to use M. Bison when we played Street Fighter II because there was many hurt feelings and many punched siblings as a result of M. Bison's powers.
See, for me, that key figure is so clearly Shang Tsung. I guess because we were Sega family and Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
But because you earned him by beating the game and he could morph into any character on the fly.
Yes.
That felt so cool.
I debated including Shang Tsung for that reason.
Yeah.
But I thought M. Bison actually meant more to me as a kid. So I'm including him for that reason.
I didn't include anyone because they're just a hard boss fight, but they are definitely honorable mentions, like the three heads on a skewer at the end of Kid Chameleon.
I thought he might make it. Okay, great. I thought he might make it. Okay.
So wait, that was your 10 and 9. Great. So the serpent has wound its scaly way back to me, which brings us to my number 9. 9? Serpentine.
Yeah, 9 and then 8.
Great. Yeah. My number 9. Oh, why did I suggest Serpentine? It's time to get crazy with Vas Montenegro, ably played by Michael Mando of Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul fame from Far Cry 3.
Really?
Far Cry, a series, of course, famously built around the antagonist. And
Yes, that's right.
So I think it kind of deserves a spot. It's trying as hard as it can to enshrine. Its main deal is we crafted a compelling antagonist. And I think pretty much everyone agrees, probably on the strength of the acting, that Michael Mando as Voss is the most, he's almost a Joker-like figure there, which which keeps him from becoming, he's not very empathetic, which in some ways limits the depth of the things you can do with a character like that. But as unhinged maniacs go, who could kill you at any second, and you just got to escape and you just got to power up because you got to put this guy down, because otherwise you'll be looking over your shoulder the rest of your life because he's so fucking crazy. I think Voss is top tier. Yeah. Love Voss.
I think he's the reason Far Cry is what it is.
And probably the reason franchise. They honed in on that formula. Of doing villain centric.
Yeah, he was astounding as a gamer. The first time he played that game, it's like, man, this guy is fucking crazy. and like, you know, the Far Cry before that was a little bit more, I'm going to say thoughtful, but like a little more geopolitically bent before this character. I think this character put them solely in the maniac villain movie trope zone. You know, for better or for worse. But he was fantastic. So excellent pick.
Number eight. Jeremy Davies as Baldur and God of War 2018. To me is like, I think this analogy is apt. Oh God help me. It's like picking LeBron James. sense that I feel like Baldur as antagonists go is in one of the most well-resourced, well-funded, like, of course, it's almost a boring pick in the sense that they nailed it, but everyone knows God of War was great. Every character was fascinating. It was a complete revamp of the series in a way with much more depth and dimension than God of War used to be. Everything was phenomenal about it. So, of course, so was the antagonist. He had interesting relationship going on with his ma, you could say. He had... And as far as like simple but powerful motivations go, he had a great one, which is he can't feel pain and it drives him insane. And of course, with that level of support, the motion capture animation was fantastic and they got a great actor who did a great job. Like, I just think Baldur is a strong all-arounder, you know?
Okay.
Yeah,
so I love that choice. Wow, I really like that choice a lot.
Oh, and that first fight that you have with Baldur where you're throwing each other through mountains. Mm.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, it's very memorable. I don't really like God of War that much. See that episode
that
for...
Game.
Really? But I don't think you kept it. I thought we both deleted it.
I might have, but I've played through it four times total, and I really enjoy it.
I did not really... Okay,
can't wait for Ragnarok.
I'm going to go back and replay it. Maybe I do remember Baldur being an excellently realized villain. So I'll go back and replay it. That's interesting. All right. My number eight, again, I believe this will infuriate Mr. Swaim, is Vladimir Makarov from Call of Duty Modern Warfare. The second and third.
The second and third. Okay, good.
Yeah, the second and third.
At least it's old school.
Here's,
I respect old Call of Duty.
Yeah, not the new. Well, no. Modern Warfare.
Oh, Modern Warfare. I respect Modern Warfare. Was a good installment. Though.
Yeah, those are really good. Yeah. So Makarov is the antagonist for the old Modern Warfare series, and the reason I'm including him is number one, like they actually made him smart. Like it's definitely video gamey, so you know, don't at me about that. But like, I think that he stands in as a smarter, more interesting version of like every militarized bad guy from like a Metal Gear Solid, right? Like, or like, you know, just that whole sort of area of gaming where they have to put a sort of a militia cipher type figure. He's that kind of figure, and he's a little smarter than most of those figures tend to be. And he's the reason that the mission No Russian matters.
Mm-hmm.
Because people probably remember this mission. If you don't, let me briefly summarize it. No Russian was a mission in Call of Duty.
Oh no! Sorry.
Fair enough.
Summary.
Call of Duty. No, you did great.
I guess that's all of Call of Duty, but especially No Russian. It's just the grim silence and the
gunshot.
It's
very grim.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea of it, if you haven't played it, is that you are undercover in this gang that's led by Makarov, right? And this gang of Russian people dress up as Russians, or maybe American. No, they dress up as terrorists, and you go through an airport, and you just mass slaughter people. Like, it's very disturbing. Like, it's a you have these, you know, gigantic machine guns, and you're just blowing civilians away. And it was very controversial. You could skip it if you want to. But what's cool is at the end of the mission,
you get a free Makarov, gun. Sorry. Yeah,
Makarov kills you,
yeah,
and unmasks you for the purpose of blaming this entire event on the Americans. Because you're an American that's undercover, and he knows that. So, meaning they leave a body behind to mislead, I believe it's the Russians, into thinking America is the architect of this, which leads to a world war. And sure, that's a little bit silly, but you know, it's a very like Franz Ferdinand kind of situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just events that spiral out of control. And I think that Makarov, you know, is a at least creative idea about how to use terrorism in a way that might incite that kind of military violence. And he keeps winning. You know, like, that's another smart thing they did with this character is he wins and he wins and he wins. And it's like, man, are you ever going to beat this guy?
Yeah.
You know? And that's a classic formula for success. So I think he deserves to be included. How angry are you about this?
Not at all. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Is that not good podcasting?
You should have been angry.
Should have been angrier. Okay.
That's okay.
I think you still have one more shot, right?
No, I don't, because we're going to take a break where we discuss our relationship.
So this is a severed serpent that we're dealing with. Great. There's gaps in the serpent. Yeah.
That's right. Otherwise, it'd become a Ouroboros, I think. Anyway,
yeah, we'll be back
after this.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbionica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbionica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbionica.com. C-Y-M-B-I-O. TIKA.com.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Hey, we're back. We've learned to communicate a little bit more clearly, you know, speaking I
Not
feel
me.
Language.
Oh.
Okay, great. Great. That was all for nothing.
I Excellent. Feel like not me.
Should I do All it? Right. But, yeah. My what number
is
seven.
Fuck you. Oh, you're number seven. Please.
I feel like you're bad. My number seven is the elusive man from the Mass
I
Effect
knew
series.
He'd make it. The cigarette yes. smoking man in space, as I likes to call him. Yeah.
I
yeah.
love Martin Sheen. I love me some Martin Sheen. Mm. Right? Isn't it? Yeah, it's Martin Sheen.
I think so.
Yeah. I like his performance here. This is a cool character because he has a viewpoint that I think you can see as legitimate if you choose to. In fact, if you play the game a certain way, he could be a heroic figure to you. Like, the game definitely in the third installment forces you away from sympathizing with him.
Right.
But especially in the second installment, like, he's a very ambiguous figure. Like, is he ruthless and evil in the sense that he doesn't always value life? Yeah, absolutely. Is he honest with you? No. but does he have intentions that one might call noble from a certain point of view, you know, in the Obi-Wan sense of the phrase? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that makes him interesting. I think the fact that he attains the kind of power that he does in the Mass Effect story is realistic if looked at sort of the way the corporatocracy functions in like these advanced democratic governments. You know, like I think that you can see how this could happen, like how he could be an Elon Musk type figure, you know. And I just think that it's nice to have somebody who's smart and ahead of you and has a point of view that you can actually debate. And he's a really good version. I'm going to have more of these types of people on this list, but he's a Puppet very Masters. Memorable one. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Cool. I loved it. What about you? How do you feel about the Elusive Man?
Didn't make the was considered for the list. Didn't make it because of the nature of it being seemingly firmly built on the cigarette smoking man.
Okay. Yes. From X-Files. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, in a way. And they came out close enough together that I do feel like nothing is new, and ideas just become, you know, relatively more or less common. Other than ideas based around new technologies or new, but core themes remain the same. I think is something we all learn over the course of this life. Nevertheless, I still like it when something's not, I don't know, it just reminds me so much of the cigarette smoking man that it feels rip-off-y to me.
Derivative. Interesting. Yeah. Your list has been very surprising so far.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I think
really.
Voss makes a lot of lists. I think Voss makes a lot of these kinds of lists.
He should. Yeah. I just didn't think you cared enough about Far Cry, but great.
I did until six. Six makes it seem aggressively bland. I don't know what actually changed, but I'm just off the wagon on that.
I can tell. Yeah. We can talk about that some of the time.
Yeah,
I know
here
what.
Nor there. Yeah. Oh, you think you know what changed? Okay.
Yeah, I do.
My number 10, 9, 8. My number 7. Lucky number 7. This is the first time I think it really comes into play what I said about antagonists, not villains. Because this is very arguable, but he's certainly in your way and is your hurdle. Logan Cunningham as Hades, the eponymous Hades from the game Hades. Love that deep basso rumble. I think they had it's more of a tribute just to the writing of the entire game, but they had to create a roguelike, meaning a time loop scenario where you could lose to this person over and over and they can be evil, but also later in the game, you can eventually beat them and it's meaningful and you can come to understand their point of view and like them, see them as a friendly rival and enter that stage, then beat them over and over and still have a reason to have any investment in that relationship. And they navigated it with such aplomb. Like, I can't really nutshell Hades. He's gruff, he's dour, he's the master of the underworld, but also you can get to know him. He's a full human being. He actually does care that he's the father, or, you know, he does feel paternal in some regard, but not as the way a human would, because he's a god. He's kind of detached. But like, he's an interesting, he's just a full-on character. And I think that's why I'm freed by just saying antagonist only, because certainly the nature of your relationship in that game to your dad changes through the course of it. But certainly for like the bulk of the game, which is when you're beating your head against the wall, losing 100 times, you hate him and you want to kill him really, really badly. And he seems like a dick. And I love shit like that, of course. And I just think it's a great game. Logan recorded a tremendous, tremendous amount of dialogue in order to make this character work. And I really admire that.
That's really fun. Mm-hmm. That's really fun. I believe you have one. Again.
That's right.
One more. Yeah.
Oh my God. I am glad I researched this first, because I always thought that this was Gary Busey. But my number 6 is Bruce Boxleitner as John Conrad from Spec Ops The Line.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. Is that on your list?
I have never played that game. I've been thinking about playing
really?
It. Really? Yeah.
Do you know the twist?
I don't know anything about
for?
It. Oh. I don't know anything about it.
Okay.
Great.
That's all I'll say then.
Wow.
I really think I hate to say it, but the reason it's such a great antagonist is because the formal nature of the antagonist, and I'm not about to spoil that if you still have that in your future. I'm sorry, podcast listeners. Usually I would say the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, but if you've played the game, you understand why. That's it. I'm not going to say anything else about the villain from Spec Ops The Line. You have to play it, my dude.
I've been really thinking. I mean, I downloaded it on my Xbox. Okay.
Okay.
Wow.
Please do.
There's so many more first person. Well, there's two first person. Wow. That's your
so
list
that's
is really
six.
Six really shocking
serpentine.
Me. Yeah. You really came to play today.
That's why I wanted
impressed.
10, because the top three are so predictable.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're going to agree on some of it. Okay. I've also been, like, sort of trying to figure out where to put this one. I'm going to put it here at number 6. I think perhaps the most controversial I'm going to pick today is Rodrigo Borgia from Assassin's Creed 2. Rodrigo Borgia.
Would you say that's a tribute to the game more than the person, or do you really like
yes.
the role? Okay.
No, yes, it's the game more than the person. He's the Spaniard. Here's what I like about it. It's the only character in Assassin's Creed from a villain point of view that I, number one, was excited to kill. Number two, I think Assassin's Creed 2, they fully figured out the Templar piece of it. Like, how to make the Templars interesting, and how to show that their rise to power is, like, that their ethos is just a justification for rising to power. Like, this guy clearly shouldn't be the Pope, but he becomes the Pope at the end. And I think that he, you know, he does the classic steps of, like, political purges, and, you know, he kills your father, and he does all that stuff. And I just think that Assassin's Creed is a great idea for a video game and a great idea for a story. And I think this is the guy who made that story work, you know, because most Assassin's Creed sort of revolve around, you got to kill this one big bad and you don't really care about them or know them. This guy, you spend enough time with him and he's real bad. He's real hateable. And I think killing him in the Sistine Chapel was a really satisfying moment in the game. It was really satisfying. And that means that something about him worked. Is he the most is he the most creative or personality driven? No, but I think it's the only way I could get Assassin's Creed on here.
No.
And the only time
I just gotta say though, I do think you could have made a very strong argument for the guy whose name I know isn't, but reminds me of Slater Kenny from number 3, the American dude you play as. At the beginning.
Yeah, I didn't like him.
Hayfield
that much.
Statham.
Yeah,
what the fuck is his name?
Hatham.
Hatham Statham.
I didn't care that much about.
I'll tell you why.
He was a good villain. I didn't care about Connor's story that much. Like, Connor distanced me a lot. Whereas Ezio, I was a little bit more with him, and so I disliked the villain more. That's a taste thing. You could make a great argument, 100%. I wanted Assassin's Creed on this list, and I thought 2 was the better one.
Okay, then I also got to say my one honorable mention that I almost put on the list, but then I didn't because I was like, I would just be doing it for the game, not the guy. But would be Hector Lamans from Grim Fandango.
Okay, that's fair.
I just wanted to give that dopamine release to the other Grim Fandango fans out there.
It's on there now. Okay, I have 5 left.
Number 5, yeah.
I think I know what I want to do here. Yeah, I think I know what I want to do here. Okay. Number 5. And again, this one goes back to just the first playthrough, as a lot of these do, is Dimitri from Grand Theft Auto 5.
Right, sure.
I don't know who played him. But man, what a hateable villain. Just a weasel in every way. And he does a few things that are like, man, this guy's like magic. How is he getting away with this? But I think the key ingredient is, if you haven't played this game, I think Grand Theft Auto 4 is still fun to play. He does a key murder that really does have a lot of emotional impact on, like, he is the completion of the arc in this story. And what's interesting about him is that he's a guy who should be your friend. Right, like, Dimitri is a guy who should have been an ally, but because of his ambition and because of his, like, just, he's just a liar.
He's real Trevelyan.
Yeah, exactly. He's the 006. That's exactly what he is. And it ends up sort of bringing home to Nico, who I think is probably the most emotionally interesting protagonist of the Grand Theft Auto series. It ends up bringing the chickens home to roost. You know, and so I think in that way, the way that he sort of parallels and mirrors Nico's journey, and the way that, you know, this is a story of immigrants coming to America and scrapping for their place on top of the pile. Like, that's what this story is. And I think Dimitri represents all the negativity of that. And Nico trying in vain to stop him from committing some heinous atrocities and from his betrayals is interesting. And I hated him. I really didn't like this guy. And I was satisfied with the way the story concluded because of that.
Barely played any four, so it's interesting because you also recently said that it could potentially make the drive. So I guess I gotta play GTA 4.
If you like story, mm-hmm. I think that's GTA 4 is the best for story. Mm. Yeah, all right. I think so.
My number five. That's the time, right? Keith Sharabaika. I'm not saying that right. Sharabaika. If you're going out on that bike, maybe share it. I'm so sorry, Keith. I'm deeply, deeply sorry to you and your family and everyone I've hurt. But I'm trying to compliment you for your portrayal of Joshua Graham, the Burned Man from Fallout New Vegas, specifically the Honest Hearts DLC. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Wow. Yes. I mean, I played it. Okay.
Joshua Graham, the Burned Man. I don't know. Yeah. All I can say in a nutshell is his origin story is that in a dystopian nuclear wasteland future, there is a Roman legion again that models themselves after the ancient slavers of the Roman legion. And he is the XO of Caesar or the Kaiser or whatever, however you want to pronounce it at this point in time. And somehow falls out of favor and gets tarred and burned alive and thrown off the top of the Grand Canyon, somehow survives. And now he's an anti-hero gentleman living in a cave, writing journals all wrapped in bandages, trying to keep a group of natives called the White Legs from getting wiped out. And that's already so much more going on.
It's a cool story.
And so deep and fraught and weird and cool than anything you hear in most video games. I just think the Burned Man is, as a mythical figure, is up there with Mothman and shit. I think he's cool. He's evocative, the Burned Man. I like him.
He has a great... Yeah, his story is interesting.
He has a great gravelly voice, too.
Yeah, yeah, and he's well-performed. Mm-hmm. He made that DLC work.
He's the central figure of that DLC, yes.
Yeah, and because of him, it's interesting. I completely agree. And that's after I'd played that game for 50 hours, so that says something.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah, man, I definitely got a big cathartic feeling leaving the wasteland and taking that long journey to the new area. Being like, all right, here we go. What's going to happen now? And it was a whole new... Whew, those DLCs, man. There's something special about the New Vegas DLCs, but that's not what we're here for. Speaking of fours, my number four is Kevin Brighting as the narrator in The Stanley Parable.
Wow, really?
Do you think that counts? Is he an antagonist?
Yeah, he counts. Yeah, yeah, he counts.
Yeah, he's almost GLaDOS-like in his antagonism, right? But he is the antagonist. He often calls you an idiot and yells at you and argues with you. And now we're getting to a point where I'm also basing it on the sheer... I actually think the performance. I mean, Kevin Brighting walks home with this ranking for me. The humor and the warmth and the humanity and the full, well-rounded nature of that performance just reminds me of all this shit I love, like Monty Python and Douglas Adams and Terry Pratchett. So obviously I love it. Yes, I love a very proper Paddington-esque British gentleman telling me, oh, go fuck yourself. Or like, this hole was deep enough. Maybe there's something wrong with you. It's so good, dude. I love to hate him. And
he was fun.
We'll do the episode eventually. I already know I found it more interesting than you did. But I really, because I watched the stream, but I really think the Stanley Parable, especially for the time it came out, is the beginning of games I love, like Inscription. Like, they gave us permission to start doing this meta deconstruction thing that now is much more prevalent. But it's definitely the grandfather of that subgenre, and it's a subgenre I love, and I still don't think you can beat Kevin Brighting for just straight up. I mean, you can, because GLaDOS is coming up on this list.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right.
But he's like a low-rent GLaDOS, and that's still something to be in this world. Number four, Kevin Brighting.
That was fun. I want you to know I really do like that game.
Oh, good.
We'll talk about it. That'll be on... Yeah. We'll do an episode on that. I did like it. Wow, I can't believe how high it ranked. Okay. We're going to get a little bit more conventional with the last four of these.
Yeah, the quantum waveform is going to collapse into the things you expect it to. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so number four. Again, my favorite from when I played the video games. Is the Flood from Halo.
Sure.
And I'll tell you why, friends. The Flood was a really freaky concept in 2001. Certainly it seems like, oh, come on, you know. But in a, like, if you didn't know what the game was about, and if you go all the way back to when Halo was like a jaw-dropping experience, which it was when it first came out, the Flood was the midpoint and the serious escalation of this story, you know, like, although I don't like the episode or the level of the library where you meet them, the idea of the Flood, sort of, you know, this zombie organism that takes over and is an unstoppable, almost like fungus-like creature, was absolutely terrifying and a great bad guy and an unexpected left turn in an otherwise very cool sci-fi story for, you know, a young man, which I was at the time. I was a little disappointed by some of the choices they made about the Flood in the second Halo, like the grave mind and all that idea. I kind of like the Flood not being a conscious entity personally, or not being a consciousness we can communicate with, but that's neither here nor there. I think as an escalation and as an entity that is dangerous, it did provide an interesting thought experiment, which is like, oh, this race is so dangerous, it's actually worth killing everybody to keep it from populating.
Is that was not an interesting aliens? Question.
It is a little
is that
bit
not
aliens.
The nature of the xenomorph.
It's not a plague. No, it's not. Okay. It's just a different race. I mean, I guess there's, but also you should know I hadn't seen Aliens when I played this game.
Mm-hmm.
So like for me, that concept was like brand new. So if you had seen it and you played it and it wasn't as impressive, I get it. But again, my favorite. And it just, you know, it's the first time I saw the trope and it really worked for me. And
I didn't play Halo till I was like 29. That's the problem.
Yeah. So like, I mean, it's like the third man, right? Where it's like, when and where did you watch it the first time?
Right.
Loved it. That's my number four.
We just heaped praise on Ocarina of Time. And I guarantee if you play it in 50 years and you're an avid gamer, you'll be like,
what?
I guess I respect it historically, but Jesus. Or like, yeah, I can't get into this.
Like, right now, the experience of playing Ocarina of Time is kind of like the French Connection.
You still got to appreciate it artistically, yeah.
But you still enjoy it. It's still fun to watch. But there's going to be a day where it's like, you know, playing it is like, you know, watching some D.W. Griffiths movie or something. Okay. Not the racist ones. He has a couple not racist ones.
Not the racist ones. We know that's what you were thinking. Yeah. Is it your turn again?
I have one more, yes.
Yeah,
and then
that's right. And then I think a break.
After, yeah, great.
Okay, great.
All right, number
Fabulous.
Three. Number three. And you knew it was coming, so please don't at me, Swam.
With a bullet?
Is Ganondorf.
Oh, God.
I know you hate it. I love Ganondorf. I love this character.
Just me, what is it? It's a, you could, one PowerPoint slide can wrap up what Ganondorf is and his deal.
That's
anyway,
fine.
This is your time. It's your time to shine.
That's fine. I would argue the same is true about your narrator character. But that I digress. Look, Ganon
There's no performance to Ganondorf. It's all text. Stop provoking me, Adam. I don't want to be like this.
You're wrong about that. Ganon has been performed many times. Ganon is, again, I like the sort of like mythical fairy tale thing about Zelda. And Ganon was always the villain that felt like he had more substance and was more terrifying in every incarnation of Zelda. And I'll never forget the first time you met him in Ocarina of Time, and then the first time you fought Ganon for real in Ocarina of Time. It's like, whoa, this is a crazy boss fight. And we already had expectations for what Ganon would be like as a battle before we played the game, and Ganon surpassed those expectations. And I think there's a reason why every time they've gone away from Ganon as a villain in this franchise, that we get less interested in it. And I like his sort of human origin story. No, we haven't spent endless reams of time developing him, but I don't think we need to. I think he's archetypal and he's interesting and a big part of my childhood, so he stays on the list.
You think Link couldn't work without Ganon?
Or doesn't work without Ganon? Couldn't?
Like Majora's Mask doesn't work for
no,
you?
No, I wouldn't say that. I would just say that I think Ganon adds something essential to that story, to that mythic tale.
I do think we need a break because I'm exhausted from rolling my eyes so hard.
Wow, you're really going deep on this, but fair enough. Time for some commercials.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbionica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbionica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbionica.com. C-Y-M-B-I-O. T-I-K-A.com.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
I apologize for the way I acted before the break. That was untoward.
Apologize to Ganon if you
big
dare.
Big apology tour this episode. Yeah. Is it me now? Right.
Yeah,
number
you're
three.
On, you got three
me
on
three.
Two. Yeah,
me on three. Okay, I think you knew this was coming, but I do have something unique to bring to it, which is just to say, as I may have mentioned before, in one of our podcasts, if not One Upsmanship itself, one of the reasons I think I am neurodivergent is that I have now watched Deep Space Nine in its entirety in order 17 times. And it's all I watch, and I have it on all day, and I sleep with it on, and I just play it over and over. And when I get to the end, I start it over because I don't like silence. So anytime there would be silence, I have DS9 on. But I can do other stuff. If you know what I mean, like if there's something going on or we're going out or people are coming over, that's fine. But if I'm alone working, I have DS9 on. And when I sleep, I have DS9 on. And if I've learned one thing watching DS9, certainly in excess of 15 times, it's that Armin Shimerman knows his shit. Armin Shimerman plays Quark on DS9, and from as a trained actor, like theater actor, he's obviously working from a very particular like theatrical method that is very classic, very stage-oriented, and the choices he makes are innovative and brilliant. His performance choices as Quark are so great, and they're definitely often vocal choices that are unexpected. And I think he applies that same gusto and innovation to the role of Andrew Ryan from Bioshock, which is the predictable part of this. The thing I never knew was that Armin Shimerman was fucking Andrew Ryan. That's awesome to me.
That is cool. I didn't know that either. Okay. Yeah.
So, enough said. Andrew Ryan, would you kindly let him be number three on this list? If you played Bioshock, you know. If you haven't, you should. I don't know what else to say about him.
Yep, I agree. I agree with that. You have number two still.
I do. Number two is, I think at this point my list is basically fully to be expected, or could be highly predicted. But number two, my list is shamefully male, as you've noted. If you've noted, eight for eight so far. I hope I make up for that in some small way
by having an all-female list from this point forward, although I know that's a meager, it's like too little too late, dude. But the future is female because number two is Ellen McClain as GLaDOS from Portal 22. And again, I'm like, I don't know what to say. You know, GLaDOS, the antagonist that everyone considers the greatest antagonist that the game couldn't exist without because she is the game. Like, the game is, can you beat GLaDOS? And Ellen McClain nails it. It's just a great performance. But more than just the performance now, we're not talking about the actor only. GLaDOS is woven into the interactability of the experience at a deep level, and just that hits on every, that reinvented the way antagonists interact with the protagonist. I mean, Stanley Parable helped because they're kind of similar now that I've put them close enough on a list to realize that. But
yeah.
GLaDOS is still the like triple A version of that experience. GLaDOS rules. Everyone knows this.
Yep. I agree.
This is common knowledge.
I agree to such a degree that I put her number two on my list.
Also number two.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I loved GLaDOS. I still love GLaDOS. GLaDOS is the tone of that story. Like GLaDOS tells you what is the tone of the game, and which is why it's so interesting that we brought her back in the second game and had to create another antagonist that was also in tone, which they did, which is why I'm giving an honorable mention to Wheatley, because Wheatley, played by Stephen Merchant, was
also
really
good.
Really good, like a really good bad guy,
right?
Because it's bad guy in a different way. Like, it's not an evil, hostile, sarcastic, you know, and like brain, like Wheatley is
like
person,
a fuss budget.
Yeah, who doesn't? Who's so ego driven and underqualified that
craven
he
and cowardly yeah.
has to convince himself that he deserves to be the big boss when he definitely doesn't. And also, Stephen Merchant is just really funny, you know, like, and has some great lines, like the tutorial at the beginning of Portal 2, where he tells you, okay, now say something, and you push A, and like, okay, you're jumping, that's jumping. Like, just stuff like that. It's like, man, this guy added so much to the video game-ness of it in a great way. So, and I think the challenge for that character was that he had to fit in with GLaDOS. The other cool thing about GLaDOS is we actually know quite a bit about who she was. Like, where we got this character.
Oh, yeah, with the Cave Johnson shit. I mean, Portal is interactive storytelling at its best.
Yeah,
as
it really
this is.
This is
not news, but
Yeah, we did a Portal 2 episode. Portal 2 would rank very high on the all-time game list for me, mostly because of GLaDOS. Not exclusively, but mostly.
Not exclusively. The moment that you realize that there's a panel out of place and you can go backstage, so to speak, Portal. Yeah.
It's so good. Yeah, Portal 1 is actually in some ways very underrated because it came up with all the ideas. It just is, there's less story there, so people remember 2 because 2 told a really rich story.
Right.
And 2 is a proper full video game and 1 is like more like a extended demo. Mm-hmm. But they're both really great games. And GLaDOS, both of GLaDOS' songs are so great during the credits. So anyway,
Jonathan Colton.
Yeah, if you haven't played that. So I'll dispense with the mystery real quick with my number one so that I can do a little bit of chatting about something else. My number one is Andrew Ryan because Andrew Ryan is awesome. Andrew Ryan, again, kind of like the Elusive Man, is a little bit like Dimitri, a person who is a twisted version of a person you could admire. Like, Andrew Ryan is a natural leader of men and women. You know, like, he's a leader. You get it. He's an entrepreneur. But his ego got in his way, and he couldn't give up on his project, and he lost control. And now, you know, he's this sort of twisted, bombastic version of
Daniel Plainview.
Daniel Plainview from There Will Be Blood. That's right.
Who is pretty bombastic.
Yeah, but
I mean,
think,
he abandoned his boy. He abandoned his child.
That's right. I drink your milkshake. Yeah, that's all awesome, right? And you're waiting for it. Andrew Ryan's like the milkshake scene the entire time in that game. And just it's so much fun. And it's a shame that he wasn't the full, like the true antagonist of that game because he was definitely good enough. I also wanted to give a couple shout outs to people who didn't make it for various just disqualifying reasons. One of them is Sander Cohen from BioShock. I thought he was amazing, and his level was the best level. And that's the guy who was like the art, like the artist who was like literally murdering people for his art installations and was so unhinged in a creepy, incredible way. Just very memorably performed. And also, I just wanted to mention the Joker from the Batman games, because Mark Hamill's Joker is amazing. And also because the Joker does make that game matter, whereas I think a lot of the other villains feel a little bit superfluous. Like, you're sort of, they're like level bosses, but without the Joker, that Batman game does, none of the Batman games totally hold together. Which is why the third one is, in some ways, was not as satisfying, because they started with the Joker dying. Now, I like what they did, where he's sort of a voice in your head, but I think we were missing him as like a, you know, as the foil, as a person you have to fight. You know, and I think he's irreplaceable in as a villain of all media, and I didn't include him because he's more of a movie character than a game character.
Sort of an all media character. Yeah.
I didn't include Darth Vader, but I would have if I was just considering Jedi Fallen Order. Like, I thought the way they used Vader in Jedi Fallen Order was awesome. You know, he's just like a terrifying like wave of destruction that you can only run from. It was like so cool. Mm-hmm. And I loved it, but I didn't include it. And last mention before I turn it over to you for your number one is Handsome Jack from Borderlands 2. Oof. I know Handsome Jack is annoying now, but there was a time when he wasn't annoying and he was kind of a funny character. And he made this franchise.
The hack, bro. He's a dialogue dog.
Well,
I just think if those jokes were pitched at the crack writer's room table, we'd all be like, whatever. All right.
They're not the best jokes.
Nice try.
But I think as a character, so I'm just giving him some credit for, I don't think Borderlands as a franchise would matter without him.
No. True.
I think he makes it matter. It's a huge franchise. I think without him, it's not as good. So he was a fun experience. Is every joke a home run? No, but you know, we're also comedy writers. We're allowed to let people enjoy the jokes, even if we don't.
I didn't know we were allowed to do 40 fucking shout outs.
Well, now you know, baby. Enjoy your shout out time.
I didn't think of any shout outs. I stuck to the assignment. Well, I don't know. I have a svelte list of 10 luminaries in the field.
You've been shouting out the whole time. Get out of here. What's your number one?
I had a Hector Lamans. That's about it. Number one, I think embodies the word antagonist the most fully in the form of like a literary antagonist. There were moments in this game where I certainly, more than anything, all I wanted to do, like a final boss, was level up enough to kill them with my bear. I wanted to see my character kill their character. And then by the end of the game, I wanted nothing more, desperately, as invested as I've ever been in any TV show or movie character, wanted nothing more than for them to be spared and not be killed. And of course, I'm talking about Laura Bailey as Abby in The Last of Us Part II.
Oh, you think of her as an antagonist?
Antagonist in the sense that she's a hurdle. She kills Joel and your quest of vengeance is to destroy her. Yeah, she's the antagonist.
Okay. All right. I didn't include her because she was half of the game. But okay, that's fine.
I think that's what I'm about to expound upon. One of the few core things that all fiction invites us to do to more or less lesser degree, and it does it so well, and games do it great, and we still don't see it enough, which is to inhabit multiple viewpoints, to step outside ourselves. And I think it's of course brilliantly, powerfully, primally effective that you experience a half of the story through the antagonist, but I do still think she's the antagonist merely from the story math of like she kills our protagonist, or you know, our previous boy.
I get it. I wouldn't argue with that. Right. If I had
wary.
Well, I guess I'm like, well, shit, I would have put her at, like, in my top three for sure if I'd thought that she fit.
Well, that's been said. That's on the record.
I thought about it. I was like, well, she's not an antagonist because you play as her.
Sure.
But that's okay. That's just quibbling. So all I really want to do is underline, yeah, she's one of the best characters in video game history.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Like she's
and the way that you
so
get
good.
To play as her is key to it. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I mean, as we said in the Last of Us 2 episode, like I viscerally hated her and didn't want to play as her when yeah. you started playing her, and she totally won you over.
And then by the end, you're screaming at Ellie, just let it go.
Just let it
just
go.
Walk
let her
away.
Let her live. Yeah. Let her be. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Like,
so
really
good.
Powerful
gives
storytelling.
Me chills. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you excited about The Last of Us remaster?
Not particularly, because I remember it scene for scene so well, and it wasn't that long ago. It doesn't feel like that big of a deal, does it to you?
No, it feels a little bit like a money grab to me, but yeah. I'm happy that there will be concurrent versions of both of those games, like that look basically in like the same generation. As like one story package, I think that's kind yeah. of cool. You know,
have you heard about The Last of Us Cremaster? That's the version where they're making every character male so that the toxic fanboys can't complain about it. Does that scan? Cremaster is a muscle that only men have. That makes that joke work.
What a bit.
What a bit. It's the muscle that pulls your testicles up into your body.
Well, now I know the kind of pillow talk you're using.
I shouldn't say only males have. I should say traditionally associated with biological males. But there we have yeah. it. Laura Bailey as Abby in The Last of Us.
Oh, and that's the name of the actress, Laura Bailey. Okay, cool.
Laura Bailey.
Yeah.
And Andrew Ryan. Let's just look at those up sitting up there on the trophy shelf. I think that's a great pair.
I do.
Abby
yeah, I agree.
And Andrew Ryan.
I can't believe.
Andrew Ryan, again, I have to say, played by the guy who played Quark on DS9.
I mean, I'm glad you like that. I can't believe how much shade you threw at Ganondorf. Like, Ganondorf's on Mount Rushmore in most people's video game villain
but that
list.
I guess that's the difference between, to me, antagonist implies some literary quality. Like, if we said best baddie, then I would do Ganondorf, Bowser, like the invention of, like, like my number four might be Koopas generally. Because I do think the idea of inventing mechanically. An animal that you hit once and then it has a shell and you could use the shell or
yeah,
you can
yeah.
just stomp it again or yeah. the shell can hit you. That's fucking brilliant beyond belief, like at the time in gaming history that came. And it leads to things like Horizon Zero Dawn, you know, like that core concept
yeah,
being iterated upon.
Yeah.
But it was antagonists, which sounds like highfalutin to me. So I went with literary style antagonists.
And I don't want to spend another 20 minutes on this. But
you
but
think
like,
Ganondorf qualifies as that
I
as
think
well?
I think you get a little reductive about Ganondorf because they don't explore in rich, nuanced detail his complexities. Like, but he really works in like a Sauron way. You know what I mean? Like, we get as much about him as we get about
but
Sauron.
Sauron is also one-dimensional.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
That's not to say... They're bad. I'm just saying they're one-dimensional.
How come neither of us put Dutch from Red Dead 2 on this list? Why didn't he make the list?
I was thinking if I was going to put anyone, it'd be Micah. I hated Micah the most, and I remember him the most as like, God, he was a thorn
that's,
in my side. I hate him.
That's also why
but
I didn't...
Dutch was very compelling. Dutch was very compelling.
That's
yeah.
why I didn't put either of them on the list because I couldn't figure out which one is actually the antagonist of that story. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I don't know why. He probably, like, if I'm honest with myself, he's probably better than Purple Tentacle. Like, he could have at least cracked the top 10, but yeah, didn't think of him. I did think of Micah and then just drifted away because for various reasons. Other people beat him out.
Maybe I would say that I could take Dimitri out and put Dutch Vanderlinde in at number 5.
Dutch Vanderlinde is a good pick.
Because he does... similar things that Dimitri did for that franchise, you know. And
I'd put Dutch instead of Balder, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're going back and fixing this so that Dutch Vanderlinde is in this list because he should be, so that our fans don't, you know, ride us out on a plank and murder us.
Look, Ganondorf appears on the Celestial Hard Drive twice, so I don't have to like be enthusiastic about it. You got it. He's on there. Relax.
Ganondorf actually does not appear on the hard drive twice.
Oh my God, just Ganon. That's true. Calamity Ganon.
Yeah, Calamity Ganon,
a
strange in-between form. Mm-hmm. But hey, we're going to have a problem with this if we ever cover like the original Legend of Zelda and stuff, right? Like, we're going to have to start picking. We're going to like, maybe another one will get on, yeah.
I'm excited to cut some of the fat.
So let me ask you this question, since we're still rolling, and I think this might be fun for the fans. So do you think we should never edit the hard drive until, like, cut stuff out until we hit the 100 mark?
No, I thought once a year we would do...
Just do maintenance, whatever it is.
An episode where we nominate, you know what, I think we should cut this one that's on there, or more likely, I think we gave this one short shrift and I want to re-nominate it. So, okay. Like we just did with the hard drive episode. Yeah. I think we should do a hard drive cleanup episode once a year, roughly.
Okay.
Probably.
I like that idea. Yeah, because I am not eager to... we do have more duplicates than I expected at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a few franchises that have more than one. Zelda's the one that troubles me the least. But, you know, like Last of Us, we have two. And Red Dead, we have two. And I think Bioshock, we have two. And Zelda, we have two. So, you know. It's a question about, and obviously you said that Elden Ring and Bloodborne can't both be on there, and that's an interesting debate. So we'll have to do that sometime, maybe this year.
Yeah. There's only one Mario game so far.
Actually,
that's surprising too. I thought there'd be more by now.
I'm looking back.
Also, Sifu made it, which is interesting. I anticipate it won't live there forever, but it's a good game.
I actually think we might have made a mistake, because I believe you actually kept Super Mario Odyssey. I was listening to that episode again, and I think you kept it. And then we also kept we kept Super Mario World. So there might be two Marios on there.
Well, are we changing it? Should I change the spreadsheet? I mean, I'm elbow deep in the data right now, man.
Yeah, I'll go back and re-listen to it one more time to make sure.
Okay, let's confirm that. I don't want to fuck around here.
Yeah, so we might have two.
Okay.
Yeah, we might have two.
Well, yeah, so hard drive maintenance will happen.
Okay, great. Well, thank you to all of you who stuck around for us to conduct our show business. And hopefully you enjoyed our discussion about video game antagonists. As you can see, there is a sort of subjective and there is an objective sort of ideal version of the antagonist villain question in video games. I like this list. I can't believe some of your entries. I thought they were really cool. So excellent work to Michael Swaim today.
And to you, sir.
Yeah. Okay. Well, see you all next time on One Upsmanship.
Wait, stop the presses.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to plug some stuff? Forgive me.
I think you should, because obviously you're prepared. what if, I don't know, like, you guys referenced movies a couple times.
I sure did.
Talk about movies anywhere?
I sure did. Yeah. Like, if you like this, if you enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy all the other podcasts that Michael and I do. Together with some of our other friends on the Small Beans Network. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/smallbeans. We have podcasts about movies, several, from the vantage point of art criticism and from the director's craft, and some specializing on various auteurs and stuff. So we really enjoy movies there. We also have podcasts on many other subjects like friendship and like depression, and like science and sort of trends and technology.
Wes Anderson.
Yeah, Coen Brothers, many.
Stephen
so
King.
Many.
All kinds of shit.
So if you want more, we got more for you. Please head on over there. Enjoy it. You can find both of us on Twitter. You can find me on Twitch, where I stream almost every game I play at The Real Gans. That's also my Twitter handle. And you can find Swaim's Twitter at SwaimCorp. And
Swaim_corp. Yep,
that's right.
And okay, I think we did it.
That's good. And I survived the battle with my antagonist, Mr. Swaim. Can't wait for our next battle, my friend.
I'm more of a slacker.
Work complete.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.